So let's discuss the transparent ASA firewall. It's pretty simple to set up. Why does it cause so many people so much grief? The answer is not everybody understands exactly how it works. Let's take it from the ground up. Before we actually go to the ASA, we want to make sure we support and have the correct support, rather, for the switches. So if the inside interface, E01, as an example, should be in VLAN 20, make sure the port on the switch is assigned for VLAN 20. If the outside interface should be VLAN 30, make sure that the switch connecting to that E00 or whatever the outside interface is set up to be in VLAN 30. Once you've done that, we're going to go to the ASA itself. We'll do a no-shut on all the interfaces involved. With transparent mode, you're only going to have two that are to be used for the transparent functionality. You want to do a no-shut on those two interfaces. You'll do a name-if on those two interfaces. A security level, if you're using anything other than the defaults of 100 for the inside and 0 for the outside, for those interfaces. And then to actually have traffic flow through the transparent firewall, you must assign a management IP address to the box itself. In configuration mode, IP, space, address, and then some IP address that's on the same subnet as the two networks that you're binding together or the two VLANs that you're marrying together. And that's the basics of how to get the ASA transparent firewall up and functioning. When you use the firewall transparent command, which is what turns the entire box to a transparent firewall, you have to go all or nothing. You can't have maybe, if in multiple context mode, one context being transparent, another context being routed. So once you do firewall transparent, it's all transparent mode. Very similar to the behavior of routed mode, the ASA in transparent mode will allow IP traffic from higher security to lower by default. And to go from lower to higher, you'd use access list. Once you do apply access list, initial traffic that's ingress on those interfaces has to bypass or has to get past those access lists for traffic to move. A couple other interesting caveats with the ASA transparent firewall. There is some traffic that is allowed through by default, higher or lower security, indifferent. And one of those is the shared STP MAC address. That's 0100CCCCCCD. Now the problem is that good old normal spanning tree, which uses a different MAC address for its BPDUs, is not allowed by default. So here's what I want to point out right up front. If you have failover with transparent firewalls, you must create special Ethertype ACLs to allow BPDUs to go through. Otherwise, you're going to have a broadcast storm on your hands. What else is allowed through by default? IPv4 multicast. So your RIP version 2, OSPF, EIGRP traffic is going to be allowed through without any special type of access list. And broadcast. Actual literal broadcasts are allowed through. There's also a whole feature for ARP inspection because ARP is another thing that's allowed through by default. I'm going to save the ARP inspection discussion for our attack mitigation section, which will be in Module 8. So regarding access flow or access control through the transparent firewall, from high to low, permitted IP traffic, permitted by default, lower to higher, you need an access list. And this is one of the few times when you can apply two access lists to an interface in the same direction. So you could specify the Ethertype ACLs to permit BPDUs as a good start and other layer 2 frame types through the ASA, as well as a normal layer 3 IP access list. So the key is when you create your Ethertype ACLs, you'll add the keyword Ethertype, and it'll know exactly that it's a separate type of ACL, and it literally will allow you to apply both ACLs, the Ethertype and the normal layer 3 ACL, ingress on your inside or outside interface. Now, we mentioned that we could have an IP address, or we must have an IP address on the transparent firewall for it to work, and that's absolutely true. If you want to have a second IP address, is that possible? Well, the answer is yes. If you want to take an interface, for example, maybe your management interface, M00, and you want to make it a management-only interface with the management-only command, you can assign an IP address to that for the purposes of managing. And then you'd have two reachable IP addresses, one on the management interface and one that's kind of hovering between the two broadcast domains that it's gluing together as a transparent firewall. Layer 3 ACLs are pretty straightforward. Most of you are very comfortable with those. What you're not, in my experience, is comfortable with is the Ethertype ACLs. Let's take a moment and talk about those. To create an Ethertype ACL, you simply type in access-list space, give it a name. Let's call it Ether, E-T-H-E-R, space, and then the keyword Ethertype. And that's what says, bing, 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 this is a layer 2 ACL. And then you'd say permit or deny. And then you could specify a whole host of things. You could specify, I want to permit IPX. I want to permit BPDUs. I want to permit, and you could specify in hexadecimal the actual number of the Ethertype that you would like to allow through. Once you've created your 1, 2, or 3, or 5, how many lines in this Ethertype ACL, you then apply it the same way you'd apply a layer 3 ACL. Access hyphen group, the name of your access list, which we called Ether, the keyword for direction, in or out, it's most likely going to be in. And by the way, if you want that traffic to flow, you need to apply it inbound on both interfaces, otherwise it won't work correctly. And the keyword interface and the name of the interface you're going to apply it to. So access hyphen group, the name of the access list, in interface inside, and I would also add in interface outside. Two separate lines to apply it. The ASA builds MAC address tables very much like a layer 2 switch would. Every time it sees a frame come in, it memorizes the interface it learned it on and says, okay, this MAC address lives on this interface. That's great. What we can do if we want to is we could disable MAC learning on our security appliance. Now, what does that mean and why is that important? Well, let's say we get a task that says disable MAC learning. So great, we disable the MAC learning. We'll take a look at the command for that in just a moment. And life seems good, no worries. MAC addresses are only good for 5 minutes. So if you have a task that says disable MAC learning, we need to hard code the MAC addresses that exist on each of the sides because our ASA is not going to forward packets if it doesn't know which MAC address they need to be forwarded to. Because the ASA does this. When it receives a frame, it doesn't just say, oh, I don't know where that is. I'm going to go ahead and forward it, blast it out like a normal layer 2 switch would. Because it's a firewall, it takes a different attitude. If it receives a frame and it doesn't know the egress interface, which is the other side, but it hasn't learned the MAC address of the destination of where that should go, instead of just saying, blast, here you go, forward it out and let somebody else figure it out, it will actually do a ping if the destination IP address is not local, trying to get a response from the gateway on the other side to tell it, oh, here's my layer 2 address. It learns it and says, great, now I can forward it. If it's a local device on the other side, the firewall will ARP for it. So even though there's like a flood, quote-unquote, option that we can configure, we'll talk more about that with IP ARP inspection, the actual flooding doesn't really flood. It really says, please go ahead and discover where that MAC address is. So that's a key difference. Anytime you deal with MAC addresses or disable MAC learning or disable flooding, which is the process of learning where those remote MAC addresses live, we want to be careful to either not turn on that feature to disable it, or we want to hard code MAC addresses in the ASA. Because if your ASA cannot resolve the next layer 2 address, even though it's in transparent mode, unlike a switch, it will not simply say, ah, what the heck, let it go. And that is a key stumbling block for many people with simple ASA transparent firewall configs. If we want to hard code a MAC address on the ASA, that part is really straightforward. It's MAC-address-table space, the keyword static, space, the interface name that you're going to associate this with, inside, outside, DMZ, whatever name you gave it, and then the actual MAC address, and that's it. So how do you know what the MAC address is for your neighbor? Well, you could look at the MAC address currently before you turn off MAC learning. You could go to the neighboring device and do a show interface. You could hard code the MAC address on the neighbor and then hard code that on the ASA as well. Lots of different ways and options to make sure you have the correct MAC address in the table for the correct interface on the ASA. We also mentioned the default timeout, or maybe we didn't say what it was, but the default timeout for MAC addresses on the ASA is 5 minutes. So that means if you disable Mac learning, unfortunately, you have 5 minutes until your network is going to stop working. And NastyGram, a lot of times it's at the end of the lab in the security section where they throw this stuff in, like disable Mac learning and blah, 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 blah. And maybe you don't have a lot of time to go back and troubleshoot it. So you throw it in, you do a couple checks, you think it's working, that's great. And then you leave it, and then maybe you don't even visit that again until the end or until you, and that's it. Maybe you don't go back at all because of time. So be very careful with anything regarding MAC addresses on the ASA. If you want to disable or if you're asked to disable MAC learning, it's really simple. MAC-learn space, the interface you want to disable learning on, inside, outside, whatever, space, disable. And that turns off the feature. Again, make sure that if you're disabling MAC learning, that you're hard coding MAC addresses for the two or three devices on each side that your ASA is going to need to know about. So how do you verify? Once you've added a static MAC address or you want to find out what the MAC addresses are of your neighbors, how do you verify that? You can do a show MAC-address-table and enter. If you want to narrow it down to a single interface, you can tag on the name of that interface afterwards, and it will show you the interfaces, the MAC addresses, and how that was learned, dynamic or static. Of course, your static entries would show up with the static keyword next to them. With the ASA version 8, they added the ability to do network address translation, just like we discussed in a previous audio lesson, in transparent mode. So if we're not using that, the way your ASA makes forwarding decisions for transit traffic is it takes a look at the MAC addresses. Okay, this traffic is coming in, and do I know the MAC address where it's supposed to go on the far side? And if so, it makes that forwarding decision, again, based on rules and filtering and everything else. If you have NAT set up, that changes the rules. With NAT set up, we're now going to be routing traffic or forwarding traffic based on our routing table. We do not support dynamic routing protocols with transparent mode, so this would involve static default routes for the purposes of moving traffic. If you have a peer at the other side, I'll say not a peer, but a router, and that router, you're doing NAT, and you need to tell that router to forward traffic for a certain subnet that you NATed for back to you, that's one of the few times when you would tell that router that the next hop is the IP address of the ASA in transparent mode. Normally, we would never configure that as a default gateway or anything else because it's in stealth mode. But if you have a router, you're doing that, and that router needs to know, okay, what do I do with this packet? That's one of the few times that you can point to that global, if you will, IP address on the ASA in transparent mode if you want it to work with the NATing. I should also point out that the static routes that you do put into your transparent mode ASA, those will be very valuable if your ASA needs to send traffic, for example, to a syslog server. Any traffic that's sourced from the ASA itself, it'll use routes for that, and that's whether or not you have NAT configured on the actual ASA. So if you have a management interface, if you have that you need reachability to for, you know, Telnet, what have you, the routes in the routing table on your ASA will be used for that functionality. So let's do a mental check here. We took a look at how to configure the ASA, the interfaces with no shut, name the interfaces, put an IP address in global config. We mentioned that you can use a management-only interface for management purposes, which would involve another IP address on that box, which is okay. We also talked about the switch infrastructure, making sure that the inside and outside interfaces are on separate VLANs. We talked about the MAC address critical nature of how your ASA forwards traffic. If it can't resolve the next layer 2 hop, which would be the outside router, it won't forward traffic, so be very careful with any disabling of MAC address learning. ARP inspection, we're going to save that for a later module, module 8, with the attack mitigation, and I think that about covers it. The next section that we have is all about the security context. We've touched on those several times, the different flavors. We're going to focus on exactly how to set up multiple virtual firewalls, how to get them up and running, and make sure it's seamless that you can do it perfectly when it comes your time in the lab to do it.